Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale pro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity is so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit won't be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth a crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movement for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin sale pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, and that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
RBGs. You know what I mean? It's war. You know what I mean? Yo, Stick. I mean, shit be real on
war.
The block. Pigs be out there, occupied army. RBGs, it's a takeover, not a makeover. Yeah.
The cops stop you just because you black, that's war. When you through the system for your prince, that's war. When they call my hood a drug zone, that's war. Slumlord charging you for rent, that's war. Why they so rich and we poor, that's war. If you young and black, you sell crack, that's war. The White House is the rock house, that's war. George Bush coming out his mouth, that's war. Chilling on the corner with your gang, that's war. Popo do the same damn thing, that's war. When they murdered Amadou Diallo, that's war. Marching in the streets is a strategy of war. Knowing self-defense is a strategy of war. soldiers try to link with other soldiers in the war. Revolutionaries got to know the art of war. War, what about hip-hop? Use that. Matter of fact, fuck a rap battle. What about a gap battle? Let's take it to the beast and see which cat tattle. Is it Kiss versus Beans, or P versus Hov? What about y'all real niggas against the 5-0? This is M1, DPs, don't you forget. Cause you can talk, 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 but that don't mean shit. I ain't gotta pop your top to see where your brains went. This rap shit is way bigger than entertainment. It's the people versus the pigs when it all goes down. It's not pop versus big, it's who's getting the power. And power ain't money, dog, it's self-determination. Like taking hot and making it the real people station, that's war. Know what I mean? Yeah. Rap war, whatever war. You live a fast life, more or less, more so, it's still war. Dead Prez, the People Radio. Yeah. Get down, get down, get down. RBGZ, biatch.
You are now listening to WRBG, the People's Radio. It's a takeover, not a makeover.
Only God can judge me.
Is that right?
Only God, man. Nobody else.
Nobody else.
All you other motherfuckers, get out of my business.
Really?
Perhaps I was blind to the facts. Stabbed in the back. I couldn't trust my own home. Just to bust a dirty back. Will I succeed? Having no it from the weed. And hope it's focused. Try to focus, but I can't see. And in my mind, I'm a blind man doing time. Look to my future, cause my past is all behind me. Is it a crime to fight for what is mine? Everybody's gone. Tell me what's the use in trying. I've been trapped since birth. Cautious, cause I'm cursed. And fantasies of my family in the hurt. And they say it's the white man I fear. But it's my own kind doing all the killing here. I can't lie, ain't no love for the other side. Jealousy aside, make them wish to die. Oh my lord, tell me what I'm living for. Everybody's dropping, got me knocking on. In all my memories of seeing brothers bleed and everybody grieve, but still nobody sees. Recollect your thoughts, don't get caught up in the mix, cause the media is full of dirty tricks. Only God can judge me.
Yeah, baby.
Only God can judge me.
Only God can judge me.
I hear the doctor standing over me screaming, I can make it. Got a body full of bullet holes laying here naked till I can't breathe. Something's evil in my IV, cause every time I breathe, I think they're killing me. I'm having nightmares, homicidal fantasies. I wake up strangling, dangling my bed sheets. I call a nurse cause it hurts to reminisce. How did it come to this? I wish they didn't miss. Somebody help me, tell me where to go from here. Cause even thugs cry, but do the Lord care? Trying to remember, but it hurts.
Kill me can only make me stronger.
For real.
I don't see why everybody feel as though they gotta tell me how to live my life.
You know?
Let me live, baby. Let me live.
Pac, I feel ya. Keep serving it on the real. For instance, say a player hating Mark about to kill ya. Would you be wrong for bucking a nigga to the pavement? He gon' get me first if I don't get him. Who start praying? Ain't no such thing as self-defense in the court of laws or judges. When we get to where we're going, we're in the cross. That's real. Got him, missed him, crept the fuck up on him. To half a million takes, now everybody want them. After talking behind my back like a bitch would, telling them niggas you can face punk, I wish you would. It'd be the same motherfuckers in your face that'll rush up in your place to get your safe. Knowing you on that paper chase, grass, glass, big screen and leather couch. My new shit is so petty, I already sold the key an ounce. Bitch, remember Tupac and Forte, them same two brothers dodging bullets representing the bay. Pop, when you was locked down, that's when I'll be around. Start climbing up the trunk, so sick, but they tried to clown. That's why they ride the bandwagon, still be dragging, selling lies. Don't think I don't see you haters, I know y'all in the sky.
Guess you
Nigga, you know me cause I'm a thug that love to hit the late night club, drinks and buns. Been living lavish like a player all day. Now I'm bout to flaw some ball players, sit with Pro Tech. Only God can judge. Only God can judge. Only God can judge. That's real. Only God can judge. Only God can judge. Back to this bitch reincarnated. That's what a homie meant. We about.
One time he celebrated the new year on March 1st. And now it has been changed to January 1st. And we went over the fact of how he had shifted the days and weeks and months around, and how Julius Caesar named the month Sextilius after himself and called it July. And how the Emperor Augustus changed Quintilius to the month of Augustus, or August, after himself, and took a month out of February to add that to the month of Quintilius that he had changed to name it after himself, August, so that he would have an equal number of days in his month, or as many days as Julius Caesar had in his month. We went through the encyclopedias. We went through the history book. How many of you were here last Sunday? So some of you, I'm sure, are still trying to determine how old you really are, what your birthday really is. And if it's really 2:30 right now, or since he changes the time to daylight savings time, and this guy, just peck of wood changing the time, any damn time they get ready, we don't know if it's 2:30, 3:30, or 1:30, but we know one thing. We're all here together, under one roof, our family here together. Some Christians in the audience. Muslims in the audience, Christians of all persuasions, Muslims of all persuasions, black nationalists, some socialists, some communists, some black people who come from many, many different walks of life, but the family together under one roof. I pray Allah that today we will be able to move through this subject and not take a lot of time. I promise not to be long, but I promise that I must be strong. My subject today is the goddamn white man. That's my subject. All praise is due to Allah. So fasten your seatbelt, because we're ready to get busy up here. My subject is the goddamn white man. I can't bite my tongue with that. I can't tiptoe with that. I can't pussyfoot with that. I can't tiptoe through the tulips with that. I said my subject is the goddamn white man. You say, but I thought I had come to a religious place. You say, I thought I had come to a place where people believe in the Bible and believe in the Quran and believe in God and believe in all of the prophets and messengers and those who have come in the divine line of divine. So how could he have such a subject, the goddamn white man? Why, it's sacrilegious. Why, it's blasphemy. Why, it's using the name of God in vain. Isn't that what some of you are saying? You can shake your pretty black head and you don't have to raise your hand. You say that's blaspheming against God. But we want you, for the time that you're here, to sit back and relax, keep an open mind. And as the Bible says, let us reason together.
Yes,
let us do what?
Reason.
Let us reason together. Now we should define our terms. If the subject is the goddamn white man, the first word in the subject is the. Is that right? The. Let's get some white chalk and go to the blackboard. The first term, we got it up here, so we'll just underline it, is Z, or the Z. Z in English grammar is the definite article. Anytime you say the anything, it standardizes it. It epitomizes it. It sets it aside and pretty much makes it a cut above everything else. This is the standard by which everything else in that category or class is to be judged. So if we say the goddamn white man, then that means there's no other goddamn man anywhere that can compare with this goddamn man. All right, but we want to look at it, though. God. God is the supreme being. Is that right? Not just any being, but God, using the definite article again, is the supreme being. God is not a supreme being. God is what? The supreme being. Nothing else to compare with the power, the wisdom, the majesty, the glory of Almighty God. So he is the supreme being. He is the creator, not a creator. He is what? The creator. He is the former, the shaper, the molder, the fashioner of everything that is in existence. He is the divine mind of the universe. Is that him? And he is called in many languages by many names. And you, black man, and you, black woman, you have always believed in that God. Never has there been a time when the black man and the black woman, could you free me a little bit? Man and the black woman have not believed in a God. I know the white man has told you that when he found us in Africa, we were swinging through the trees, eating bananas and eating each other, and hollering ooga booga, and that we were savages, living on a beast level, and that he brought us to America and civilized us, that he did us a favor by bringing us to America. But such is not the case, because white folks do lie. We have always believed in the supreme being. We have always believed in the creator. We have always believed in the shaper, the molder, and the fashioner, that one who called and willed everything into existence. We have always believed in the divine mind, the infinite intelligence, the power, the force that is behind the cosmological and universal order of things, and who set it all to a balance and set it all up according to divine law. We have always believed in that God. You go to one part of Africa and we call him Nakumpo. You go to another part of Africa, we call him Umvelinko. You go to another part of Africa, we call him Unkulunkulu. What we call him? Say it again. Let me hear you say it one more time. Nakumpo, Umvelinko, Unkulunkulu. In another part of Africa, we call him Shango. In another part, we call him Oshu, Ogun, Ilegba, Babaluaye, Oludumare, Obatula. Another part of Africa, we called him Ptah. And we, there, in the holy city of what is called Egypt by the white man, but it's called Kemet by us, which means black. In the ancient nation, African, black African nation, Kemet, or what is called Egypt by the Greeks, in the holy city of Abydos, in the sacred temple of Seti I, there on the walls in what the white man calls hieroglyphics, but what we call in the language of Kemet, the Meduneta. In the language of the Meduneta, not hieroglyphics, you can read it on the walls, and it dates back 4,100 years, some say 5,000 years, you can read on the walls the first creation story. Yes, sir. It predates the creation story of the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It predates the creation story, or it predates the beginning of the Holy Quran, so it pulls both of them together. Where a God among the African black man and black woman that we call, again, showing you that we always believed in the one God. When we say Umvelingo, we hold up one finger. When we say Umkulunkulu, you'll see the African holding up one finger. Why are you holding up one finger, African? I'm holding up one finger because Umkulunkulu is the one God. I'm holding up one finger because Nakumko, Umvelingo, because Shango, Ilepa, Babaluaye, Oludumare, Opatula, and the others, they represent one God, Olufu, Ileda, who is the feminine representation of that one God. Because we never had a hang-up in Africa, the God and the goddess always go together. You can't talk about a universe unless you talk about the God and the goddess. When you talk about Olufu, you got to talk about Ileda. Because it is from the holy bond of Olufu and Ileda that you get Oludumare. You can't talk about the god Osiris unless you talk about the goddess Isis. Or you can't talk about Osa unless you talk about Aset and the offspring, the divine, immaculate conception that comes from Ileda and Olufun. Oludumare is the divine, immaculate conception. And that holy one, that child that comes from the black Madonna Isis or Aset, from the union, spiritual union with Osa or Osiris, is Horus according to the Greeks. But in the Medunetta, his name is Heru. So we always have the God and the goddess. If you were going to Kemet or to Egypt now, you will see where the white man always tries to chisel the female out. He always tries to destroy the black goddess and leave the God by himself. Because you ain't got no God unless you got the God. You don't have no balance unless you have the two of them working together for the balance and harmony of the universe. All praise is due to Allah. We're on the one God, and we're on the fact that we always believed in that one God. Right. And so there in the holy city of Abydos, at the sacred temple of Seti I, in the so-called hieroglyphics or in the Medunetta, we find the first creation story where the God, the black God, what kind of God?
Black.
Where the black God, Ptah, through authoritative utterance and divine will and creative force and power,
right,
gave utterance and called and willed the universe into existence.
Right.
And so the Holy Quran says that he said, Kun fayakun. Kun fayakun. Be, and it is. Be, and it is. Kun fayakun. And the Bible says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and he said, let there be this, and let there be that, and let there be light, and there was light. And the light, it says, then began to harmonize with the darkness. So let there be light. Kun fayakun, be, and it is the authoritative utterance that the Africans, do you read in the hieroglyphics or the Medunetta, that Ptah Hotep, through authoritative utterance, willed and called the universe into existence.
Yes,
in another part of Africa, we called him Amen. In another part of Africa, we called him Amen-Ra.
Right.
In another part of Africa, we call him Aten. All over Africa, we believe in the one God.
Yes,
we have always believed in the one God.
Yes,
the one power and force behind the universe. The white man ain't never had to teach us nothing about no God. The white folks don't believe in no God. The only God that the white man believes in is himself. When he says on the back of the dollar bill, in God we trust, it's him that he's trusting in. When it was time to go and raid Noriega in Panama, he didn't call a meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Negro Uncle Tom, boot-licking, butt-licking puppet Colin Powell, the Negro and his staff, and call them all in and say we're getting ready to attack Panama. Let us bow our heads and say a word of prayer. Do you think Bush did that? Do you think he said, Our Father, who art in heaven? Do you think he did that? When he got ready to attack Brother Maurice Bishop, the leader of the New Jewel Movement in Grenada, do you think Reagan and the boys called a meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Senate and Congress and had a moment of prayer before they did it? No, and if they did, they were doing it to themselves. They said, load up the troops, the guns, and the ammunition, and let us go.
That's right.
When it's time to launch one of their spaceships, they don't say, let us bow our heads. They say, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. They start the countdown and counting, right? He believes in no God except himself. And so he will make up a mystery God, but then he'll give you a son that looks like him, with blonde hair, blue eyes, and pale skin, and tell you that if you see the Son, you've seen the Father, because the Father is in the Son, and the Son is in the Father. So if you see a white man as the Son, your subconscious has to suggest to you that the Father must be white some kind of way, also to produce a boy like that. Your mind has to say that to you. And here, as we look at it, we again have always believed in one God. In fact, all of the other people of the earth get their religion from us. The black, the brown, the red, the yellow, all of them get their religion from us. I got a bag back there with a big book in it that I need right at the table. It's in the kitchen, I think. Brother Jamal knows where it is. No matter what land you go to, they believed in what we had given to them. You go among the Mexican-speaking people, they believe in a black savior, a black messiah, who has a strange set of circumstances surrounding his origin into the world, who comes from a black Mary or a black Madonna. I just need the book out. I didn't want to give Pier 1's a plug up here. Pier 1 Imports a plug up here. Among the Greeks and the Romans, they always believed in a god that we had given to them. In Greece, it was Zeus. And Zeus was a black god. In Greece, they also had Apollo. You get to the Apollo Theater in New York. They had Apollo. Apollo was a black god. In Rome, they even worshipped a black woman as the goddess of Rome, Isis. In France, they worshipped her. Because when you study the etymological root of the term Paris and Paris in French, you will find that it is linked to the root of the name Isis, and that at one time the city, back down the wheel of time, came from the name Isis. I'm talking about Paris. You had Fuhai of China, Zaha of Japan, and I mentioned those who speak Spanish. You had Quetzalcoatl. You had Krishna of India, which means the blue or the black-skinned one, blue-black-skinned one, or the purple-skinned one, Krishna of India. And you see many groups of white people throughout America today who worship the black god Krishna. You see them with their head shaved and a little ponytail or a little ponytail, running up and down the street, beating a gong and hollering, Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, whatever the hell they say. They believe in a black god from India named Krishna. Everywhere you went in the world, Zeus, Apollo, Krishna, Buddha, all of them black. So we gave religion to the world. We gave morality to the world. We gave ethics to the world. We believed in an ancient system of morality and ethics and spirituality called in Kemet, Mayat. Mayat, truth, justice, order, harmony, balance, and reciprocity. Mayat, and the Mayatic balance that black people had in the black nation, in the black society, is what attracted the white people of Europe to follow this moral code called Mayat. Now, we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I bring you greetings today from his spiritual son and his representative in our midst, the man who is the fulfiller of his work and the extension of his work, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I bring you greetings from him of Assalamu Alaikum. When you study these two men, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, or the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you will find that they teach us of a book that is called the Old Testament, the Torah, and they teach us of the Injil, or the Bushra, or the New Testament, or the Good News, or the Gospel. They teach us of this entire book called the Bible, but we don't study this book from a white theology perspective. We study the Bible from a black theology perspective. We believe, all praise is due to Allah. Really, when the truth is told, we believe the scripture when it says God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. But we know that the spiritual is dependent on the material, and the material is dependent on the spiritual. That the two are dependent on each other. That you would never know the spiritual existed if the material didn't exist to manifest the spiritual to the material world. Huh? And you would never get any real function and benefit out of the material unless the spiritual was working in the material as the prime mover in and behind the material. So you can't have the material without the spiritual, and you can't have the spiritual without the material. That's the meiotic balance of the universe. That's what Professor George G.M. James is talking about in Stolen Legacy. That's what Dr. Ben is talking about in his great works that he has given to us. That's what Dr. John Henry Clark is talking about. Dr. Asa Hilliard. Dr. Jake Carruthers, Dr. Maulana Karenga. This is what the scholars among us is talking about. This is what Sheikh Antidia is talking about. This is what Dr. Ivan Van Sertima is talking about. This is what Dr. Richard King, Brother Carol Barnes, and many others, this is what they are talking about when they tell us about this meiotic balance and the balance in the nature of the black man and black woman, and how we gave religion and science and law and art and music and mathematics and civilization and religion and ethics and morality to this no good cracker who was crawling around on his all fours in the caves and hills of Europe, a savage in Europe. All praise is due to Allah. We pattern our lives today after a caveman and after a cave woman that just crawled out of the caves and hills of Europe and walk around today with an attaché case smelling like Pierre Cardin and smelling like Uchi and Coochie and Gucci and all that other stuff. This is a caveman. He spent 2,000 years, she spent 2,000 years in the caves and hills of Europe. I'm still talking about the goddamn white man. Spent 2,000 years in the caves and hills of where? E-U-R-O-P-E. This man, Elijah Muhammad, and this man, Louis Farrakhan, they teach us that E-U means caves and hillsides. Europe, Eureka, you've heard the term. EU means caves and hillsides. Rope is self-explanatory. They were roped or bound or confined within the caves and hills of Europe for 2,000 years. And for 2,000 years, this blue-eyed devil crawled around on his all fours. He ate his meat raw. They ate each other even. They ate dogs. They ate anything. They take tree limbs and bust an animal in the head or drop a rock or a boulder on the animal and bust the animal in the head. Blood everywhere, all in the mangy, diseased fur of the animal. dragged the animals back to the cave, and the little baby devils, and the medium-sized devils, and the mama devil, and the daddy devil, and the uncle devil, and the auntie devil, and the cousin devil, and the grandma devil, and the grandpa devil, all of them would then start biting on the nasty hair and fur of this dead, bloody animal lying right there in the cave. They didn't know anything about fire. Yeah, when they first discovered fire, they damn near ran off the cliff. Gee whiz, gee manini, what is that? Really, they couldn't make any, they couldn't even talk in those days. How many of you saw the movie Quest for Fire? Hold your black hands up. If you saw Quest for Fire. In Quest for Fire, you saw... But they tell you, you were a savage. They want you to believe that you were a savage. They walked around all in ooga booga. They're the ones that put the lie on us. But they were the ones who go, sign language and all kind of stuff. You could always talk. There's never been a time when you couldn't talk, black man. And we know it ain't never been a time when you couldn't talk, black woman.
Sister's got something to say. Because she's the first teacher. The children, the babies, they learn the language from her. They don't call it the father tongue. They call it the what? Call it the mother tongue instead of the other tongue. They call it the mother tongue because it is mother who fills them with the spirit of life. It is mother who inspires them, giving them inspiration and information that moves them along the course of life. And so they call it the mother tongue because the goddess is the one who breathes that life into them. Y'all still with me? We still talk about the goddamn white man. All of these thoughts running through my head, I don't want to miss anything. So, for 2,000 years, he was in the caves and hills of Europe. They'd bring the old mangy animal in the cave, and they would bite on the animal and eat the animal raw. Then they would leave the animal right there in the decomposition coming up from the animal's life was just a matter of fact. It was just a part of the daily routine. For 2,000 years, the white man and white woman lived in the caves and hills of Europe, roped, bound, confined in Europe, living worse than in the Dark Ages. He did his number one in the cave.
All right. Yeah.
You know what number one is. He did his number two in the cave, too. So for 2,000 years in that same cave, he did his number one. For 2,000 years in that same cave, he did his number two. Can you imagine walking around in your number one and your number two generation after generation? Can you imagine not just walking around in your number two, but can you imagine lying down to go to sleep every night right there in your urination and your defecation? That's what they did for 2,000 years in the caves and hills of Europe. For 2,000 years, that's what they did. And today they still like their meat raw. Don't they? Some of you go to the restaurants, you try to act like white folks, don't know what the hell you're doing. You haven't even been to that kind of fancy restaurant before. You're trying to show off. You know how you can fix them big, beautiful, thick African lips all to the side and get proper when you like to get proper. You're trying to listen to the white folks at the next table so you can decide what you go on. And they say, I'll have a prime rib in cut. You say, yeah, that sounds like that's pretty good. So you think you cool, you straight now. But then the waiter asks the next question. How would you like that, sir? How would you like that, ma'am? And you heard the white folks say, I'll have mine rare. You say, well, hell, that must mean it's a real special kind of snake, a steak. If it's rare, it must not be no more steaks like that one in the whole restaurant. So I got to show off for my lady, so I'm going to get a rare in cut prime rib that ain't got no more cuts like that because it's rare. It must be a special steak. And so you sitting there proper, waiting, holding your cancer stick in your hand, puffing on a poison nicotine weed that the goddamn white man gave you, foul on one end and a fool on the other end of the cigarette. You sitting there waiting,
and they bring it with the blood all in the plate, and then you lose your coolness. You ain't proper no more. You lose all of that. I don't want this here. What you bring me this here for with all this blood? I don't want to with all this. I thought it was rap. He said, well, sir, or ma'am, it is rap. They still eat their meat raw today. They like to eat it with the blood running out. They like to taste the blood. They got blood pies. They got blood pudding. They got a pudding called Boudin. Blood. And they sit down and eat it like it's Hunt's or Heinz tomato sauce. Big tablespoon of blood. I say, isn't it great, honey? She said, yes, it's wonderful. Me the escargot. That's another thing they hang you up on. They say, we, our special today is escargot ugahukishi. You don't know what the hell it is. And they bring it to you and you find out it's nails. And them African lips get straight then. You're not proper anymore then. You're not holding that little, you know how you can hold that little finger up when you're trying to get proper. I don't want no damn snails. I don't eat no snails. Crawling white folks love snails. They even have another delicacy that they call mountain oysters. That's the male organ of the bull. Sex organ of the bull. They eat the bull, the male bull genitalia on a plate with a fork and a knife and some salt and pepper. Call it a delicacy. And you sitting right there eating with them. You want a rattlesnake steak. These people did this for 2,000 years in the caves and hillsides of Europe. They crawled around on their all fours. That's why our dear brothers in this house, who we love and respect, they should be here at this meeting today. We love them. The Grand Master of this lodge should be sitting right up here. We have a special seat for the Grand Master, the Imperial Grand Potentate. We got a seat for all of them, the daughters of Jericho and the heroines of Jericho and the Eastern Star. We got a special place for them because they are following after the white man's order and not after their own. They have 32 degrees, is that right? 32 degrees. But they say that they are upright on the square. Been raised from a dead level to a living perpendicular upright on the square. In order to be upright on the square, you must have a 90 degree angle, is that right? It must be a 90 degree angle to be upright on the square. Half of that is what? Is a 45 degree angle. Is that right? 45 degree angle. But now here's the people who say they're upright on the square. And they got 32 degrees somewhere down here. And 32 degrees is freezing on the Fahrenheit scale. Then they get an honorary degree, the 33rd degree, and they go into the Shriners. And they name their lodges Mecca Lodge, Medina Lodge, Muhammad Lodge, Elijah Lodge, Quran Lodge. These are white folks, white presidents are members of the Quran Lodge, the Muhammad Lodge, the Mecca Lodge, the Medina Lodge. Did you know that? White judges, whites who are in corporate America. Even white straw-chewing, tobacco-chewing, snuff-dipping, overall-wearing peckers down in the deep south that will call us a nigger in a minute. They believe in masonry, and they are members of Quran Lodge and Muhammad Lodge and Mecca Lodge and all of these lodges. And they wear a fez with a black tassel on it. A red fez with a black tassel on it. With a star and crescent like this one turned upside down. Not right side up, running through it. You see them wearing it in diamonds in their lapel with a sword running through it. The sword is there to remind the white man. You have robbed the black man and the black woman of their name, their language, their religion, their culture, their God, their folkways, their mores, their norms, and robbed them of the very power of their own being. And if you ever let the black man know who he really is, if you ever let the secret leak out of who the black woman really is, if they ever know who they really are, you will never be able to control them again. So that will be the hour of the resurrection of the dead, the rise of the black nation, and the fall and the demise of the white man. So they can't let you know. They can't let you know who you are. That you are actually a god, black man, and you are actually a goddess, black woman, and we are all children of the Most High God. You can read it in the 82nd chapter of the book of Psalms. Ye are gods, all of you children of the Most High God. It says, arise, O God. That's the 82nd chapter of Psalms. Then they contend with Jesus. You know Jesus, right?
Yes, sir.
Jesus, that's the black revolutionary Messiah.
That's right.
Who is he?
Black.
Now, some of you can't say that because you're so used to a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, pale-skinned, buttermilk complexion peckerwood up in the stained glass windows of your church. Here you are, blacker than the ace of spades. Some of you so black and beautiful until you blue black, purple black and beautiful. Some of you so black until you blacker than 150 million midnight. Hair so nappy and beautiful until it looks like a million black power fists standing up on top of your head. But you go to a church with a white Jesus, a white Mary, am I lying? Tell the truth and shame the devil. White angels with a white robe on and some white chicken wings. Some of you even believe God is white and you can't see him, you see. You believe the angels are white. When you close your eyes to pray, you see a white man. Oh, Lord, help me get out of this jail. They done gave me 40 years. And you see a white man in your mind that looks just like the white man that gave you the damn 40 years. How you gonna get out? You gonna get up. Oh Lord, the rent is due. Got a red notice on the phone, a red notice on the gas, a red notice on the light. The refrigerator is empty. Oh Lord, please help me. And you see a white man in your mind who looks like the white man down at the water and power department who's going to turn the lights off. White man in your mind that looks just like the white man down there who's going to turn the gas off. Look just like the white man who's going to authorize the marshals to come and set your stuff out on the street. He looks just like the white man that's going to serve you notice to get out of his house. The scriptures say he or she who calls on the name of the Lord God shall be saved. So the question is, have we been calling on the right name of God? Have we been calling on the right God? The question is, have we been calling on God at all? Or have we been calling on the devil? Have we been praying to the devil hoping that God would overhear and answer? Or have we been praying to the devil thinking that the devil was God? What is the best place? Where is the best place for the devil to hide? Well, the best place for the devil to hide is in the house of God. Huh? Isn't that the best place? Most people won't look for the devil in God's house. But the Bible says that God's coming would not be until after the workings of Satan. That Satan would be given a period of rule and reign to do his thing. But then God, that would be an Adventist day, an advent of the God, meaning the coming of God. God would be seen coming in the clouds, Doesn't mean you're going to walk outside one day and look up in the clouds and see somebody up in the clouds riding a reindeer or riding a cloud or some foolishness. It's symbolism. The Bible is speaking in parables, symbols, metaphors, and similes. And you must understand the parable, the symbol, the metaphor, and the simile. It means that he would be seen coming in the clouds of confusion. That it would be a time of great darkness. It would be a time of great peril and danger. It would be a time when it's very, very cloudy and the people would be in flux and confusion. But it says that when he would come, that he would dispel the darkness and the clouds and the confusion, and he would break the power of the devil by the brightness of his coming. That's what the book says to us. So, finishing this up so we can move very quickly, these people here have only 32 degrees, which is crawling around. But they're 360 degrees. And in order to be upright, you've got to have at least 90 of those, and we start you out with that as soon as you join the Nation of Islam. You ain't got to pay $500, you ain't got to pay $1,000. We don't take you in a secret room and beat you upside the head and paddle you on the back and tell you that you got to ride the goat. Hell, you've been riding the goat all your life. We don't tell you you got to cross the hot burning sands because you've been in the wilderness and the desert of North America at the United Snakes of America since you've been here. So you already have crossed the hot burning sands. You've already been riding the goat. And you've been getting, you're not a member of the board of directors. You're always the one that gets the board. So you've already been through the initiation. So when you come in with 90 degrees. When you get the student enrollment and the actual facts and hear one or two of these lectures, you got 90 degrees. You can handle any grand master.
That's right.
Huh? You can handle any grand matron.
That's right.
Because the black grand matron and the black grand master really is supposed to be here. That's the truth. That is knowledge, 32 degrees, that was given to white people to rule for a limited period of time. So they were given limited knowledge for a limited period. Not much, hell, if we'd been given any more than that, we would never get out of this condition. You see what they've been able to do with that. You still with me? So God is a supreme being. Now what does, there's three ways of spelling damn. D-A-M, not talking about that which blocks water, but you can spell dam, D-A-M, according to the so-called lexicographers, Webster and Thorndike and the other boys, D-A-M-N and D-A-M-N-E-D. All three mean the same thing depending on the usage of the term. What does damn mean? Damn or damned means to be condemned to hell. To be sentenced, convicted, or condemned to hell. To be meted out the punishment of hell's fire and hell's destruction. That's what damn means. And so if somebody says the goddamn white man, that's not cursing, that's not blasphemy, it's not using God's name in vain, fool. Only God can damn a thing. Nobody else has the power to convict it, to condemn it, to sentence it to hell, and to destroy it completely and utterly, except God himself. So when you say God damned a thing, then that means ain't no bringing that thing back. The Holy Quran says, he or she that Allah exalts is exalted indeed. But he or she that Allah debases or brings down, no one can raise them up. So when God damns you, when God sentences you, when God convicts you, when God condemns you to the death and doom and destruction of hell, then there is nothing that can bring you back. So when we say the goddamn white man, it's not to be vulgar, it's not to be blasphemous, it's not to be cursing, but it is to say that God
has damned the white man. God has condemned the white man. God has sentenced and convicted the white man, and his world is coming down. And your world, it is...
Rushing a fella, that's my bro, my family, rose in jail. When it comes to money, I did concentrate. Make I tell you straight, you are not my mate. If you become a shall I be head of state. But my people then go say, I know one buy, I know one die, I know one family, I want enjoy, I want chop life, I want buy moto, I want build house, I still want done up. Tell me, my nigga, what's it gonna be? G-Wagon, all depends. Stick at them, ride the whip, I know beat. Die for nothing, my nigga. What's it gonna be? G-Wagon, all different. The gallon, ride the wind. I know me, die for nothing. Unuwa for now.
Another race is a leadership that will enslave you. Any leadership that teaches you to depend upon another race is a leadership that will enslave you. They gave leadership to our foreparents, and that leadership made them slaves. But we have decided to find a leadership of our own to make ourselves free men. Our great scholars have been passed through the colleges and universities, have thrown away the blessed record. Babylon did it. Assyria did it. France under Napoleon did it. Germany under Prince von Bismarck did it. England under America under George Washington did it. Africa with 400 million black people can do it. If you cannot do it, if you are not prepared to do it, then you will die. You race of cowards, you race of imbeciles, you race of good for nothing. If you cannot do what other men have done, what other nations have done, what other races have done, then you have better die. Can we do it?
Yes.
We can do it.
Yes.
We will. We shall do it.
Yes.
We pray to God for vision and for leadership.
Yes.
And He has given us our universal vision. A vision that will not limit our possibilities to America. A vision that will not limit our possibilities to the West Indies. But a vision that said there must be a free and redeemed Africa.
Yes.
Christ the crucified, Christ the despised. We appeal to you for help, for succor, for leadership. When you endeavor to carry your burden up the heights of Calvary, when white men spurned you, when white men scorned you, when white men spat upon you, when white men pierced your side out of which blood and water gushed forth, it was a black man in the name of Simon the Syrian who took your cross and bore it up the heights of Calvary. And now that we are bearing our burden of being so heavy, we just ask that you just help us on up the heights. Oh, yes, the cause is grand, the cause is glorious. Surely we shall not turn back. Oh, sail on, sail on, sail on. Oh, mighty ship of state, sail on. Sail on until the flag of the red, the black, and the green is perched upon the hills of South Africa. Because the time has come for the black man to forget his hero worship of other races and to create and emulate heroes of his own. We must canonize our own saints, create our own martyrs, and elevate the positions of fame and honor black men and women who have made a distinct contribution to our racial history. Sojourner Truth is worthy of a place of sainthood alongside the Joan of Arc. Crispus Attucks and George William Gordon are entitled to the halo of martyrdom with no less glory than the martyrs of any other race. Toussaint Louverture's brilliancy as a soldier or a statesman outshone that of any other people. Hence he's entitled to the highest place as a hero among men. Because Africa's created millions and countless millions of black men and women in war and peace, whose luster and bravery outshone that of any other people. So why not see good and perfection in ourselves? We must inspire our literature and promulgate a doctrine of our own without any apologies to the powers that be. That right is ours and God. Let sentiments and cross opinions go to the winds. We are entitled to our own opinion, and are not obligated to or bound by the opinions of others. If others laugh at you, return the laughter to them. If they mimic you, return the compliment with equal force. Because they have no more right to dishonor, discredit you in manhood than you have in dealing with them. Honor them when they honor you. Disrespect and disregard them when they vilely treat you. Their arrogance is but skin deep, an assumption that has no foundation in morals or in law. They have sprung from the same family tree of obscurity as we have. Their history is as rude in its primitiveness as ours. Their ancestors were running wild and living in trees of branches like monkeys as ours. They made human sacrifices, ate the flesh of their own dead and wild meat from beasts for centuries, even as they have accused us of doing. Their cannibalism is more prolonged than ours. When we were embracing the banks of the Nile, they were still drinking blood out of the skulls of their conquered dead. After our civilization had reached the noonday of progress, they were still living in holes with bats, rats, and other insects and animals. After we had already unfathomed the mystery of the stars and reduced the heavenly constellation to minute and regular calculus, they were still backwoodsmen living in ignorance and in blatant darkness. The world is indebted to us for the benefits of civilization. They stole our arts and sciences from Africa. Then why should we be ashamed of ourselves? Their modern improvement. To be reflected and resurrected by our generation and our posterity. Why should we be discouraged if somebody laughs at us today? Who's to tell what tomorrow will bring forth? Did they not laugh at Christ, Moses, Muhammad? Was there not a Carthage, Greece, and Rome? So we see and have changes every day. So pray, walk, be steadfast, and be not dismayed. Because as the Jew is held together by his religion, the white race is by the assumption and the unwritten law of superiority, the Mongolian by the precious tie of blood. Likewise, the black man must unite in one grand racial hierarchy. Our union must know no clime, no nationality. But let us all hold together in every country, in every clime, making a racial empire upon which the sun shall never set. Let no voice but your own speak to you from the depths. Let no influence but your own rouse you in time of peace and time of war. Hear all, but attend only to that which concerns you. Your allegiance shall be to your God, your race, your country. Remember that the Jew in his political and economic origins always was the Jew. The white man is first a white man under all circumstances, so you can do no less. Be black, buy black, think black, and all else will take care of itself. Let no one inoculate you with evil doctrines to suit his own conveniences. Charity begins at home. So first to thyself be true, and thou canst not then be false. So no matter. Because God and nature first made us what we are. And out of our own creative genius, we make ourselves what we want to be. Follow always that great law. Let God and the sky be our limit and eternity our measurement. There is no height to which you cannot climb without the active intelligence of your own mind. Mind creates, and as much as we desire in nature, we can have through the creation of our own minds. And today, being scientifically the weaker race, you shall treat others only as they treat you. But in your homes and everywhere possible, you must teach the higher development of science to your children. And make sure that we have a race of scientists par excellence. For in religion and science lies our only hope to withstand the evil designs of modern materialism. Never forget your God. Remember that we live, work, and pray for a binding racial hierarchy whose only natural, spiritual, and political limits shall be God and Africa at home and abroad. With God's dearest blessings, I leave you for a while. One love.
Brothers and sisters, Marcus, Mosiah, Harvey.
He involves more than just opening the eyes and exposing the retina to the environment. It means then, in a sense, the mind sees through the eyes and directs the eyes, is what to see. We, in hypnosis, we deal with something that we call sometimes negative hallucinations. That is, getting people, let's look at the other type of hallucination first, say the positive hallucination. The positive hallucination, of course, is getting people to see what is actually not there. To see things that are actually not present in reality. And of course, some of you probably have seen those kinds of hypnotic tricks where you tell the hypnotic patient or the client that he has a rabbit in his lap, and of course there's nothing there, and he then proceeds to pet it and play with it even though it's not there. This is what we call a positive hallucination. You can also produce a negative hallucination. You can tell the hypnotized subject that an object which is right before his face is not there. And he will see everything except that particular object that you've directed him not to see. You see this sometimes in certain forms of schizophrenia, for instance. Some types of schizophrenics can look and see everything on this podium here, except to have this tape, even though it's right there before their eyes. sometimes it's fascinating when you look at people who are so-called mentally disturbed, particularly the schizophrenic, because you can see the enormous powers of the human mind. And in this instance, then, you have a mind that for some reason or other is instructing that patient not to see a particular object right before his face. And yet, he's seeing all of the other objects around it very, very clearly. So what we are trying to talk about here then is that if your mind and your brain is inefficiently programmed, then that inefficient program will misdirect your eyes, will misdirect your senses, will create for you then a reality that is, in a sense, unreal. It will mean then, since you are missing reality and missing parts of that reality, you cannot efficiently cope with it. To a good extent then, when we look at the history of the African man in relationship to the European, we see a man whose reality has been created for him, whose mind and brain has been created in such a way that even the most obvious things in reality are overlooked and not seen. And this is often done through what we call this so-called education. Remember, I alluded to the idea of trained eyes, experienced eyes, which means that an individual's mind has been created so that the eyes can find what that individual is looking for. What makes you think then that the European who trains your mind is going to train your mind to see reality in such a way that it will overthrow his dominance over you as a people? How do you expect to see reality from a people who writes your history in such a way that you don't even see yourself there? So when you look at history, you're not there. You look at American history, you're not there. You look at world history, you're not there. You look at anthropology, you're not there. And if you are there, you're there as a primitive, Stone Age kind of people, never having written anything or contributed anything. You look at economics, and you're not there except perhaps as a commodity in and of itself. You look at mathematics, and you're not there. You look at every discipline, and you do not see yourself. What kind of reality, then, can we be looking at as a people when our minds have been trained in such a way that we have literally negative hallucinations as well as positive hallucinations? It's amazing then that when we look at these disciplines where we don't see ourselves, so many of us call this kind of education in these disciplines a good education. It's an amazing kind of thing. You've had a people who have hung you, lynched you, degraded you, enslaved you, killed Indians, colonized people all over the world, killed millions and millions and millions of people, exploited people, destroyed people, polluted the earth, have they done such a job on the earth until you begin to wonder if they come from the same planet. You begin to wonder if these people are not a type of infection, a virus whose purpose it is to destroy the health of the world itself. And as we see them now beginning to destroy the earth and now getting ready to move their destructive natures into the cosmos itself. They've already made it to the moon and are now preparing to infect the whole of the universe. How can you then, as a people, assume that the people who've done all of these kinds of things to us as a people can give us a vision of reality? How can we accept their description of reality as the one with which we are going to guide our own behavior? How can we believe a people whose very lives depends upon our continuing domination? And yet there are those among us who seem to want to believe this, who seem to want to push their children under the instructorship of these people, who seem to want their people to resemble these people in some fashion, who have the nerve to see these people as representing some kind of civilization. These people may represent a culture, but not a civilization, particularly if we're going to look at the word civil in the sense that it is normally used. We saw this thing here. In fact, last week I remarked somebody had a conference here somewhere, and they voted against or they condemned terrorism. In fact, I saw someone proposed that the meeting between Reagan and Gorbachev would involve a discussion of terrorism. And I found that so amusing. In fact, I find the newspapers and the TV, particularly the news, very, very amusing. And they're real jokes to watch. And in a way, you're looking at these guys and they're going to talk about terrorism. And yet, here are the world's two greatest terrorists sitting in conference. Two people in the world who have the world wondering, when is the end going to come? When is one of them going to go off and drop a bomb that is going to destroy the life of man and perhaps life on earth, period? The very fact that they are seen as powerful people, the very fact that the world sat in intense attention when they met, is symbolic of the fact that they are holding the world in a state of terror, and that we are frightened that they may, for some reason or other, let loose the great power that they have under their hands. And yet they have nerve enough to talk about terrorism as if it belongs to another people. And yet these are the people many of us want to claim that we want our children to be just like. These are the people we want our children to share a piece of the pie with. And yet these are the people whose very weapons are weapons of death. These are the people who represent death in the world. One of the things I recognized when I went through the graduate schools, and that struck me again and again and again, and that was this idea that these people are dead. They're not alive. And dead people are deadly. What kind of civilization can it be when the more civilized you become, the more deadly you become? How can you justify that as civilization? We as a people then have to recognize that there must be an alternative to this kind of being. That the idea of our people is not to share equality with these people. because the system that they represent is one that in and of itself should be rejected. What kind of education, and the brother wonders sometimes why I don't want to be called doctor, or I don't want to be called this and that. In a sense, I think if we think about it very closely, we should be very hesitant about giving ourselves those titles that are conferred upon us by these other people and what they so-called represent. Because we have to recognize that the educated individual is the craziest of all individuals. That the educated individual is the most dangerous of all individuals. When this world comes to its end, it will not be brought to an end by the muggers on the streets, ladies and gentlemen. It will not be brought to an end by the drug addicts, by the street prostitutes, by the youth gangs. It's going to be brought to an end by people with PhD degrees. It's going to be brought to an end by people who studied physics and mathematics, who spent 15 and 20 and 30 years in school. It's going to be brought to an end by people who live in nice clipped lawns with houses on the corner, with neat hedges, two-car garages, nice little well-spoken children, the people who send their kids to private school. And one morning they'll go off to work and give their wives a nice little bourgeois kiss. And then they'll go down and sit in front of the console of their computer and proceed to blow themselves up along with the rest of the world. What kind of education is it that leads to these kind of people, ladies and gentlemen? These people are being educated into madness. A real Afrocentric education would not educate people in such a way that they then develop tools of death and destruction, that they become the endpoint of a destructive procedure. When you must recognize then that these very people you bow and dip to and defer to, these very so-called experts, are the people who are going to take you directly to hell. Because you are responding to them not in terms of truth, not in terms of what they're really saying, but in terms of their symbols of authority. And because they lay these symbols of authority on you, they can tell you any kind of nonsense, and you're ready to believe it. And because they threaten you and intimidate you with their degrees and with their so-called learning, you're not willing to follow your own common sense and question what they have to say and where they're going and what they're doing. And you don't have sense enough then to say, wait a minute, if you are so well educated, if you are so liberal, if you are so perceptive, if you are so concerned, why are you making weapons of death that will destroy you, your children, and the futures of mankind? Why are you then living in the laps of luxury, having far more wealth and money than you could ever use, while millions and millions of my people are starving and dying the world over? So we must recognize then that these kind of people cannot lay a correct perception of reality upon us as a people. And we must recognize that the very educated among them are the very ones who are responsible to a great degree for creating the distorted reality we face today. We have to recognize that knowledge in and of itself does not represent the salvation of mankind. You saw this in the book of Genesis, didn't you? Where Adam and Eve were told to stay away from the tree of knowledge. And the old devil there was telling them, what? Eat of it. You shall be as gods.
Back, back, just telling you that.
If you get a hold of this fruit, and you'll see right around, you can see just as good as God sees, and in a sense, you will become God yourself. And they ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. And from this point on, we see that knowledge was not the salvation of man. And you can see it today in the Caucasian, who believes that the more knowledge he gets, the more somehow he's going to be able to be godlike. He thinks that if he gets to know more about DNA, he's going to be able to create life, and perhaps he will to a degree. But have you also noticed that the more knowledge he's gotten, the more of a danger he's become to the world? And that the more he got to know about the atoms and the so-called foundations of the world, the more he has also gotten to know about how to create death and destruction. So consequently, he is in a race with himself, thinking that knowledge will save him, when all it does in most instances is push him closer and closer to the end of his life on earth. And so the Russians feel as if they knew a little more about the United States, a little more than the United States, then they would be able to defend themselves against the warlike nature of this country. And therefore they learn a little more and build a more dangerous weapon. And the United States then feels if it knows a little more than the Russians know, it will defend itself against their weapon. And they move a little closer to death and destruction. Because, ladies and gentlemen, it is a people who have been educated in terms of knowledge, but not in terms of the spirit, not in terms of the heart, and not in terms of the soul. It is a knowledge that is dead and materialistic.
Do not be deceived by this kind of thing, ladies and gentlemen. It is quite possible. Even if you don't think it's possible, you have to prepare for the what if. I've often mentioned to people about the Martin Luther King dream, you know, and he lays out the dream. It's a beautiful dream, I've remarked. But then that dream is also based on an if. You know, if they will love us, if they will accept us. And there are a lot of propositional statements in there, you know, if the economy is good and all of these kinds of things, then little black boys and white boys and girls, and they hold hands together. But we recognize that this is a propositional statement that's being made here. But you also have to ask the other question, what if it doesn't work this way? You see? What if the dream does not come true? Another problem we have often, we believe in the American mythology of progress. We as blacks have bought that idea. We bought this idea because America has advanced to some degree over time, and many of us just automatically assume that things have got to get better. That's sort of the American way of thinking, isn't it? You know, we got it today, it's got to be better tomorrow. There's no law that guarantees you in any way that things have got to get better, ladies and gentlemen. There's no universal rule that says life has to get better, that says race relationships have to get better, simply because you were in slavery some years ago and now you have a so-called relative degree of freedom, the idea then that you can never go back into slavery, or the idea that you can never re-experience Reconstruction and the other kinds of things, to think that this is not going to occur. There is no law in the universe that tells you that that this cannot be the case. There's also this belief in the invulnerability of the white man, and the belief that somehow he's going to always protect his interests and be able to advance his interests, and therefore as long as we hang in with this guy in protecting himself, coincidentally he'll protect us. There is no law and rule in the universe that says the white man is going to rule forever. As a matter of fact, if you look at history, it's going to be very clear that the civilizations built by the white man shall perish as the others have perished. So even in the good times, wise people prepare for bad possibilities. Even if we were to hold hands with little white boys and white girls, and you know, that was all this great Martin Luther King dream, that still does not say that we should not prepare for the other possibilities, because they can't occur. Recognize that all of these dreams are often based on, very much based on economic systems. And when economic changes come about, these dreams turn into nightmares. And recognize, let's look at an example here. Look at New York City and the problem we're having with education in New York City. This problem we're having, particularly in terms of African Americans, is very much connected with the economic situation in New York City. Ask yourself the question, what if we educated 100% of black and Hispanic children in New York City? They read well, they could pass all the civil service exams and the whole bit. But what would happen if the economy of New York City did not expand to accommodate all of these great graduates? And plus the other people who are also graduating at the same time. You see, we assume simply because we keep getting more degrees that there will be automatically more jobs out there. But that is not necessarily the case. You can educate a vast number of black and Hispanic children. You still have not solved the problem that there may not be a market out there to absorb these kids when they get out there. And you will see then some more furious confrontations taking place of a prepared group of people and educated group of people who now cannot find jobs. And if you think the other people are unwise and unhip to this, you got another thought coming. So consequently, it becomes wiser for them to pretend that we are having tremendous problems in education, where you chop off over 50 or 60 or 70% of black and Hispanic children early in school, and you can say they don't work because they are not educated, and therefore everybody gets off the hook. But you can see the miseducation of these children is in part related also to the economic structure. It means that the economic structure has to expand at the same time you increase the number of graduates from secondary and from collegiate institutions. If the economy does not expand, the dreams of Martin Luther King will not come true, because the economy cannot finance these dreams. And these dreams have to be financed by something. And so we have to recognize then what is going on in reality here. You have to ask yourself then, in so many years of education, to what degree are we as people and African people in a position to really protect our biological interests? And ladies and gentlemen, I believe that the biological interests of black people, the biological survival of black people, is in question. I'm not talking about quality of life. I'm talking about life itself. As I've often said, when we look at this situation, the military situation, the situation of pollution and so forth, what African nation, if the Caucasians decided tomorrow that they wanted to re-enslave African people, what African nation or group of people could militarily defend the interests of black people? With the kind of space weaponry we have floating around in the atmosphere, what African nation could defend militarily its own people, other people in the world? In what way has all of the college education and the degrees in engineering and so forth we have gotten advanced our ability to defend ourselves militarily and in other ways? Let me look, though, quickly at something else, and let's try to context education in terms of this. I often talk about what I call constants. A child reaches a major milestone in its development when it can recognize constancies in the world. That is, when it recognizes how the world stays basically and essentially the same in many important areas, even though it appears to be changing. And even though in terms of its sense organs, it is changing. If you were to look at the images of this room on my retina or cornea, the room certainly would not have its rectangular shape. because it would actually be shaped very oddly. This door passes, I move, each time I move, the door would change shapes. Even though perceptively, as far as I see it, it still stays the same. But actually in terms of the image that's projected on my retina, it is constantly changing with every movement I make. And not only is it changing relative to me, but its shape is changing. And if I were to go on just what is thrust on my retina, I would have to lean sideways or all kinds of ways trying to get through this door. But what happens is my brain corrects the image that is projected on my retina. And it maintains a constant image of this door, despite the myriad of changes that may be projected on the retina of my eye. So it permits me then, despite where I stand in this room, how I move, to move very efficiently through that door, because my brain is maintaining a constancy of perception despite some obvious changes as projected on the retina. It is very important that we keep this in mind, because if you don't maintain a perception of the constants, then you will be deceived by every change in the world. You know, someone says the French have a statement that goes, the more things change, the more they remain the same. You know, and often many things change so that they can remain the same. And often we have been deceived by the changes that have happened, let us say, in this country. We look at slavery time, we look at Reconstruction, and we break history up into these various parts. And often we compare what opportunities we have available to us today against when we were in slavery and against when we were segregated and against it. And it looks like we've come through tremendous changes. And we get the idea that the world has changed drastically. And of course, this feeds into the mythology of progress. That if it's changed this much since that time, it's got to get better further on down the road. But then you must recognize that there are certain constants that are still behind these apparent changes. And I'll mention some of the constants here. There could be others, of course, you can come through. When you talk about the European, you must recognize the European is only about 10% of the world's population. And that's a very important concept to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen. It sounds like a coincidental statement, but it's one that's important because a great deal of European psychology and orientation to the world is based on their minority status. We as Africans and people of African descent are a part of the world's larger majorities, not minorities. The European is a small group of people. It is a minority group of people. And that minority, its minority status has shaped its psychology and its orientation to the world, both consciously and unconsciously. And often then for this minority to maintain its control over the world, it must, of necessity, maintain an enormous military power. And this is one of the constants that it's going to seek to maintain no matter how many white boys and girls you hold hands with, no matter how many white people you sleep with and marry and all of this kind of stuff. This is a constant. Military power, an overwhelming military power. As a matter of fact, it was a part of that military power that has you here today. And you can see today the greatest problem in this country and in Russia and in other European countries involves money spent for military outlays. A vast consumption of the country's wealth and resources goes into military resources. And despite the fact that you tell the people you have enough weapons now to kill each individual 700 times over, they still rob everybody to build up this military power. Because they recognize, being such a small group, that the only real advantage they have over these other large majorities is an overwhelming military presence. And now you can go to all of these schools and everywhere you want to go, but that's a constant. That constant has been there since you first met the white man, and as a matter of fact, it has not been diminished since. And the intention is that it will always be that way. Even when you join the military, you'll still be a part of that old situation. It'll be set here. That's one of the constants that maintains itself. The other constant, of course, is economic power. Maintaining economic control of the world. That control was being established when we first met this man in Africa. It has grown since that time, and it is still maintaining itself at this time. You can get as many jobs as you want to on Wall Street. You can work for IBM. You can work for all the rest. But the constant is that they're going to still be owned by Europeans, that they're going to still be controlled by Europeans, and that ownership and control is going to be used to manipulate the psychology of non-European people, to maintain the subordination and servitude of European people. You think now because you have a choice, you can choose computer engineering, and you can choose this and that somehow you have it over your great-grandfathers who were slaves? Let's look at that constant. Of course, not every black slave was a field hand. We had roles there too. Not every black slave was a house servant. You had carpenters, you had skilled craftsmen. You had people who were up to date, and I'm speaking of slaves now, in terms of crafts and skills, who worked in mills and factories and all the other kinds of things. And yet, the ultimate thing was they worked for the benefit of their masters. They turned their profits over to their masters. That relationship has not changed one whit. The idea that because you got a degree in computer engineering or whatever you may call it, that you somehow have changed from your great-grandparent who might have been an iron worker and a skilled one, that this has changed is only an illusion. Because as your great-grandparents worked to enrich his master, so when you get out of this school, you're going to work to enrich your own masters. Oh, they're not going to hold a whip over you. They're not going to, be as brutal, perhaps, but the same essential relationship is going to be there. And therefore, it is the intention. As a matter of fact, the integration of our people into these jobs is still being done to maintain a grip on the economic system. So what do? As I often tell my students, you are being educated to put a black face on white power. I was reading something the other day. We were talking about conditioning. And in my psych class the other day, and how you use conditioning to manipulate desires and so forth in people and to try to induce people to buy various items. And of course it talked about the Coke campaign, how Coke would start off its campaign with Bill Cosby's show, how it would be identified with intimate groups and so forth, associations, how Michael Jackson, I believe, would be used as such, how Michael Jordan, the basketball player, would be used and shown drinking Coke and so forth, and how a black advertising agency would be hired to project this image to black people. It had Fernando Valenzuela for the Hispanics. It had reggae music for the Caribbean, about Very Cherry. Cherry Coke. Someone told me that cherry in the Caribbean also has to do with being high, doesn't it? Someone ever heard that? So Coke is very cherry. And yet you see here then an association of a product with people's culture and with their backgrounds and with their values as a way of manipulating the mind, manipulating their desires and creating desires in them and increasing their consumption. And using then black agencies and Hispanic agencies and Asian agencies and hiring black vice presidents. And it always amuses me when you read about the vice presidents of large corporations and you always get to this black person who's the vice president of special markets. Of course, he is the black man on staff whose special job it is to show these people how black needs and moods can be manipulated to earn greater money for the white company. So in the end, while you may point out that now you have black vice presidents, you have black advertising agencies, and how far we've come. When you get down to the very bottom dollar, it is still the old game of extracting resources and money and everything else out of black people and using them to enrich the economic power and resources of Europeans. And of course, the Europeans found out that it works better when you put a black face in the position to do this. So ultimately, he maintains his economic control by projecting and educating black people to do it. It's the same old game as neocolonialism. I don't think there's no coincidence that you have neocolonialism occurring pretty much in parallel to so-called integrationism or assimilationism in America. The same kind of game is going on, putting black faces on white power, because when you look under that black face, you'll still see economic control and economic manipulation being taking place. I was looking the other day, sometime back, I was reading in the New York Times about how many scholarships were available to black South Africans. In fact, there was more money available to black South Africans than there were black South Africans to take the money. And you say, well, now why is this? I mean, they're looking for them. Well, why wasn't this money available 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 30 years ago? Why is it being available now? Of course, the obvious situation is here that where the Europeans see that they will lose political power in South Africa, what they want to do, of course, is educate its next leadership generation. And of course, knowing how we eat up white degrees, we're going to, when these people go and get these degrees out of these Eurocentric institutions, we're going to respect them so highly, we're going to put them right into office, and they're going to bring their educated values and orientations right with them and help to maintain and repress the group in the interest of their European tutors and mentors. So now the money is being available. If you read colonial history, you'll see often as the Europeans turn to loose the so-called colonies, they establish schools and institutions so that they can educate the leadership class, and of course we can see what kind of problems that is involved. And a similar game goes on within this particular culture. By the way, you say, well, you know, we have to play that kind of game. Well, I have to play that kind of game and eat, I'm going to do it. But there's no assurance that you're even going to eat. If you had read last month, in fact, still this month, Black Enterprise magazine, you would have seen the lead piece in that magazine dealing with, what is it, how to survive, it's something like, how do you survive the cutbacks in industry? And there's a whole article on there advising black how you get severance pay from these companies as they cut back. As a matter of fact, Graves says in that piece that 500,000 middle management jobs have been knocked out since the early 80s, ladies and gentlemen. That there is a severe cutback. He's now, and he's speaking very clearly in terms of his own class interest. He says the black corporate class, whatever kind of class that is, is strictly endangered. Then he goes on to say that also means danger for the black people as a race. But of course, he deals with this class first. And so what he's concerned with is, he goes on to say further in that article that there's concern whether there will be any black who's going to head a Fortune 500 company by the year 2000. And he mentions the idea that there are actually fewer black college graduates today than
yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Come on, us. We can't kick tailors. You say, what is this? My beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defense of fitness. So rest the show.
You got to go to what you know.
To make everybody see. In order to fight the power that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
They broke on me, said I ran a stop sign, but that's a lie. I spent my whole life staring at the stage, playing Sega, daddy smoking Sherm, mama playing spades, catching papers. Grandma said I'd get some Jordan for my grades, that's my baby. When she died, my heart broke 100 ways. I spent my whole life trying to make it, trying to chase it, the cycle of a black man divided, trying to break it. You take a loss, shit, don't cry about it, just embrace it. Minor setbacks for major comebacks, that's my favorite. My nigga L said, you do a song with Nip, K-Dot, he a better grip. I said he a man first, you hear the words out his lips. Flourishes from the streets to black businesses. Level 4 yard living given to false imprisonment. Listen close, my nigga. It's bigger than deuces and foes, my nigga. Since elementary, we close, my nigga. You're straight like that. I give you the game, go back to the turf and give it right back. For generations, we've been dealt bad hands with bad plans. Prove your dedication by hopping out Grand Am. I'm at the premiere, politicking with Top Nip and Snoop. Damn, clock watching the way we move. Dedication.
If it ain't
congratulating,
it looks like
hands.
Hold up.
Blah. This ain't entertainment. It's four niggas on a slave ship. These songs just the spirituals I swam against them waves with. Ended up on shore to their amazement. I hope the example I set's not contagious. Lock us behind gates but can't tame us. Used to be stay safe, now stay dangerous. Cause ain't no point playing defense, nigga. That's why I dove off the deep end, nigga, without a life jacket. Couple mils for the world, all my books, bring it back so it's no taxes. Royalties, publishing, plus our own masters. I'd be damned if I slave with some white crackers. I was mapping this out, I hit the heist backwards. Topping out the 85 and Reebok classics. Read a couple marathons just to get established. To make it happen, you got to have it. Dedication, hard work, plus patience. To some more of my sacrifice, I'm done waiting. I'm done waiting, told you that I wasn't playing. Now you hear what I've been saying. Dedication.
Have to understand specifically what you're dealing with. And without the specific understanding, there cannot be. This is just like in a war. Until you understand the exact nature of the war, what is the war fundamentally about? You can't really design strategies and tactics. And so we are not going to be able, this is why if we look back, things look worse today than they did 50 years ago. You see, because we're not dealing with an analysis. We're dealing with, you know, telling people not to kill each other. We're not dealing because we're not allowed to talk specifically about racism, white supremacy.
You know, my purpose as a psychiatrist in talking about this and making an analysis of what we are specifically dealing with is like any other thing in medicine, that you don't just deal with the symptoms of a problem. You have to wonder, well, what is the disease base that the symptoms are a reflection of? And what we have is blocking a discussion, any in-depth discussion of racism, white supremacy. I mean, I'm the only psychiatrist in the United States that has been talking about racism, white supremacy for 40 plus years. I'm the only psychiatrist in the world that is talking about it. Do you see? Because it's like there's a block. We are not going to talk about it. We can talk about the symptoms. We can have all kind of people come on TV and talk about the symptoms. But
the controlled press, the white press, inflames the white public against Negroes. The police are able to use it to paint the Negro community as a criminal element. The police are able to use the press to make the white public think that 90% or 99% of the Negroes in the Negro community are criminals. And once the white public is convinced that most of the Negro community is a criminal element, then this automatically paves the way for the police to move into the Negro community exercising Gestapo tactics, stopping any black man who is on the sidewalk, whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent, whether he is well-dressed or whether he is poorly dressed, whether he is educated or whether he is dumb, whether he's a Christian or whether he's a Muslim. As long as he is black and a member of the Negro community, the white public thinks that the white policeman is justified in going in there and trampling on that man's civil rights and on that man's human rights. Once the police have convinced the white public that the so-called Negro community is a criminal element, they can go in and question, brutalize, murder unarmed, innocent Negroes, and the white public is gullible enough to back them up. This makes the Negro community a police state. This makes the Negro neighborhood a police state. It's the most heavily patrolled. It has more police in it than any other neighborhood, yet it has more crime in it than any other neighborhood. How can you have more cops and more crime? Why? It shows you that the cops must be in cahoots with the criminals.